And Eric Manser works for IBM and is going to talk to us about an autonomous vehicle, I believe, named Ollie.
Hey, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. As Jerry mentioned, I am Eric Manser. I do work at IBM. I live not too far from here, about 40 minutes outside the town, in a town called Littleton, near one of IBM's largest labs. I'm spending more time in IBM's Cambridge offices these days. I have the distinct pleasure of working on some very interesting projects at IBM. I'm part of their research team focused on accessibility, which opens me up to a lot of really interesting and exciting work, and no 2 days are the same. I myself am experiencing vision loss. I have retinitis pigmentosa, some of you may be familiar with. I was diagnosed at Mass Eye and Ear at age 5 and have been gradually losing my sight over many years. I'm 44 now, and I have some remaining vision, basically a small central circle of cataract-affected central view remains. So the topic of accessibility is something that I hold near and dear to my heart. Also, as Jerry mentioned, I will be talking a bit about one project in particular that I've been involved with. In my more official capacity at work, I've been involved since January of this year in a project called Accessible Ollie. I wanted to share a story first. I woke up this morning and went on Facebook and saw an all too familiar share by one of our friends at Perkins School for the Blind, and it was a frustrating experience that she had on a Friday evening with trying to arrange paratransit to get home. And she was talking about all too familiar experiences. I'm sure many of us have hundreds of stories exactly like this, where you're dealing with best case well-meaning people who may not necessarily be using kindness or empathy in relating to you, doing things like pushing back your scheduled pickup time so that it doesn't throw off their performance numbers. All of these kinds of aggravating, frustrating things that make it feel very much like sometimes the people that you deal with when you're trying to arrange and you're relying on transportation help don't necessarily see you as a person or view you as a person. They view you as your disability, and that's extremely aggravating. And something I can absolutely relate to many, many times over. And it just reinforces the sense of pride that I feel in being part of this self-driving vehicle project that I'm currently engaged in at IBM. I'm sure we all have a great sense that there's a lot of excitement about this self-driving technology that is coming quickly, and the sense that for so many of us, it will either restore or bring independence. And for me, as someone who gave up driving voluntarily about 15 years ago, and at that point became so reliant on my friends and family and public transportation, and just the sense that it could restore a lot of that independence, a lot of the sense of dignity that I don't necessarily need to reach out whenever I need to get to a simple doctor's appointment or things like that. So it's extremely gratifying work that I'm involved in, and I'm very happy to be here to share about it with you. Accessible Ollie, just a little bit of background. Ollie is, as Jerry mentioned, an autonomous vehicle. It's unique in that it's a 3D printed vehicle, and it sounds, when I first heard that, I thought, wow, that's a little interesting. I'm not immediately clear on the value of that. It's a 12-person shuttle van, and it's produced by a company called Local Motors, and they're based out of Arizona. This year at the Consumer Electronics Show that happens every year in January in Las Vegas, IBM and Local Motors, as well as the CTA Foundation, which is the organization that puts on the Consumer Electronics Show, the three of those organizations announced a partnership, and it focused specifically on this 12-person 3D printed shuttle van. The reasoning to have Ollie be the focus is because there's an existing relationship between Local Motors and IBM where IBM's Watson technology is already included in this 12-person shuttle van that Local Motors produces. And the announcement that was made at CES and the partnership that was announced really focused on kind of a grand challenge. And it stemmed from the fact that Local Motors identified a unique opportunity that they had with this very unique shuttle van. The goal is to make Ollie the most accessible self-driving vehicle in the world. And when we all made that announcement at CES this year, the commitment was that by next year, CES, in 2018, next January, that we vowed to return to CES with an Ollie vehicle and some new features, some new technologies implemented to in fact make this the most accessible autonomous or self-driving vehicle that there is. So it's a bold claim. When the announcement came out, it made us realize how short a year is. And you know, we set to the task of aggressively trying to make this happen. There's an audio described video that I'd like to play, and I'm hoping that the speaker will work well enough for the folks on the phone. And if any of you are fans of James Corden, he hosts one of the late night shows. He's a very entertaining British fellow who is becoming more and more well known for his car ride karaoke sessions that he does with various celebrities. So he's kind of a funny guy. And the audio described video that I have here is him meeting Ollie for the very first time. And so I'd like to have us all meet Ollie along with him.
Are you serious? Can I have an ejector seat?
Let's do it.
I don't want to eject, but if my dad is being annoying, gone.
Reserve, what's next? Exploring the future of travel. A series created by Sapphire Reserve, starring James Corden, featuring local motors. At a small bus stop on an empty tree-lined road, James.
Chase Sapphire has sent me to discover what's next in travel. For my latest stop, I've come down to Tennessee. While I'm here, I'm gonna get a 3D car printed to help me with all of my Tennessean needs. Is that a thing? I'm just waiting here. There should be someone called Ollie coming to pick me up.
A black and white minibus pulls up in front of James. Its doors open. James walks in. The vehicle is empty.
Ollie?
Hello, James.
James looks around.
Who's that?
A tiny video camera.
It's me, Ollie. Please have a seat.
Right. Where's the driver?
I'm the world's first cognitive, self-driving shuttle. And I'm electric. I'm the future of travel.
Is this your only voice? Can you do any other voices? Can you do a Tennessee accent?
Hey y'all, who wants grits?
Ollie drives along the road.
I mean, honestly, I don't always trust my driving. Why would I trust a computer?
Because I don't drink, text, or get tired.
So how do you flirt with other buses if you don't text?
Ha ha ha.
Was that your laugh?
James leaves the bus and meets a man and woman.
Thanks so much, Ollie. Thank you. Hello.
Hi.
How are you? I'm James.
James, I'm Jay.
Nice to see you. Hello.
Brittany.
Are you real or are you robots?
How would you know the difference?
I'll take your word for it. Let's get in there. Come on.
They walk into a building.
Totally a robot. Right, Jay, Brittany, who are you and what do you do here? And bear in mind that I will believe every word you say.
I run Local Motors, a technology company that designs and builds vehicles tailor-made to their location. We 3D print them, and then we can put in driverless technology or technology that talks with you when you're in the vehicle. The Ollie's almost fully 3D printed. The car that we're making for you is fully 3D printed.
How will I be able to customize the vehicle?
You come up with it and we will make it happen.
In the future, we could really imagine that the rental car company becomes the car maker themselves. You can get into a vehicle that's bespoke for the experience that you want to have while you're traveling. We think this method is the future of the travel industry.
So can we go now and design my car that I'm going to see in Tennessee with? I've got some ideas. I'm just saying, prepare to be blown away.
Designing the car.
Can I help you out?
Hi, Craig. I'm James. How are you?
How you doing?
So I can put anything I want on this car?
Yep.
I'd like no roof. I want it convertible so I can feel the southern wind in my hair. Cruise around Tennessee, top down. What I'd love is the ability for it to become a hovercraft. Instead of a horn, it just goes, the gear shift. I'd like it to be a mold of my hand so I'm capable at all times of holding my own hand.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Feel it.
James clasps Greg's hand, intertwining their fingers.
How does that feel?
Awkward.
Later, James and Brittany in a manufacturing complex.
So this right here is the 3D printing machine that your car is actually being printed on.
James gestures toward the large industrial device.
So can this 3D print anything?
What do you have in mind?
Like a bathtub.
Yes.
A watch.
Yes.
A 3D printed father who says, I'm proud of the choices you've made.
Brittany tilts her head, then looks away.
Do you think this is how all cars will be made one day?
I think that's the direction everybody is heading. I think we're just ahead of the curve.
Well, this is you. Where's the curve?
He holds up a finger, moving his other hand.
You're a foot ahead of the curve.
You're
not
right.
Actually that impressive.
Montage footage of the 3D factory. Jay.
I said, I want all vehicles to be different. 3D printing offered us a way to make a custom vehicle for a traveler that suits the needs of where they're going anywhere in the world.
James removes the red sheet that covers his new car, revealing a sporty black and red vehicle.
What do you think?
I don't know what to say, Jay, other than you're welcome.
James climbs into the car.
I mean, this feels great. I mean, oh, and look at that.
A gear shift knob in the shape of James's hand.
Let's take this bad boy for a spin.
James pulls out in front of Ollie.
Hold it, James. That rental isn't free.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. Can I give you my Chase Sapphire Reserve?
You know I don't have hands, right? Just pay online.
Is that okay?
Affirmative.
I'll see you around Tennessee, Ollie.
James pulls away in his compact, curvy new vehicle.
Why do the pretty ones always leave?
Sapphire Reserve. 3x points on travel from local transit to car rentals. Travel's changing. Carry the only car designed to stay ahead.
Oh, no. I forgot a radio. I thought that was standard.
Chase.com/Sapphire Reserve.
So, yeah, that was kind of an entertaining introduction to Ollie in a James Corden sort of way. But you notice he also met the folks at Local Motors. Jay, the founder of Local Motors, talked a little bit about what makes their company unique. And they even, you know, in addition to the Ollie 3D printed vehicle that we met, they printed a separate vehicle for James. And the thing that I think that highlights that I didn't realize coming into the project was the benefit of 3D printed vehicles when you're targeting a goal of accessibility is the iterative potential. And as we're coming up with innovative ideas of new features, new characteristics to add to a vehicle, whether it's an adjusted style wheelchair ramp or a different type of seat to include, when you're dealing with a company that 3D prints their vehicles, that gives you a lot more agility. You know, the way that they've described it is that if you were to talk to one of the top auto manufacturers, maybe like a GM or, you know, a Ford or whatever, and you were to suggest a design change today, it can be 3 to 5 years before you ever see that implemented. But if we come up with an idea that we'd like to implement into an accessible Ollie vehicle, you could see it implemented by the end of the month. So when we're targeting a project to kind of trial and error, tinker with things, try some things out, see if it works, see if it doesn't work. It's great to have the agility that kind of, you know, let's go back. I mean, if a 12-person shuttle van doesn't give us enough space to have a, you know, a suitable wheelchair spot, you know, then, you know, we can go back and all of a sudden it's a 20-person shuttle van. So we've got that kind of flexibility in the project. You know, some important factors that have really played into the announcement of the collaborative effort here. There are over 1 billion people, this is according to the World Health Organization, or 15% of the world's population experience some form of disability. According to the United Nations, the number of people aged 60 years or older is projected to grow by 56% worldwide by 2030. 1.6 billion people, or 23% of the world's population, is over age 50. The world is experiencing an explosion in connected devices and cognitive computing capabilities, with over 6.4 billion connected devices and interfaces worldwide. And it is estimated that 10 million self-driving cars will be on the roads by the year 2020. So a lot of the background on why, you know, we consider this project to be important. So again, about the project, IBM Research and Watson IoT have announced a new collaborative effort with Local Motors and the Consumer Technology Association to create the world's most accessible self-driving vehicle. This partnership will leverage the power of IBM Watson, the Internet of Things, and new innovations in technology for accessibility. We will be launching a series of workshops, and actually this is in past tense, but we've held a series of workshops that, you know, focused on participants of all ages, all backgrounds and abilities, and, you know, some of the workshops that we've held were even done locally here. Creating the world's most accessible vehicle will do a couple of things. It will allow older adults to age in place and remain independent and self-sufficient in their communities. It will also help those with cognitive, vision, memory, or physical challenges to leverage transportation, improving their independence and quality of life. It will provide enhanced access to work opportunities and community services to people of all ages and abilities, and it will ensure a successful transition to the driverless car technology for all. Working in accessibility, technology accessibility on a day-to-day basis, you really have a firsthand appreciation for the importance of including members of the communities that, you know, can provide direct feedback. And so this was very much a part of the strategy that we wanted to take with trying to design Ollie for accessibility. You know, we've heard the phrase, nothing about us without us. It's one thing for a room full of developers to sit there and try and simulate what blindness or low vision is like, but it's quite a different story when you actually have blind or low vision people come in and sit with them. And, you know, I still use many of the low vision features, you know, on my computer. And whenever I go and I sit with a room full of developers and they see what their work looks like as I experience it every day, you know, it's very eye-opening, for lack of a better term, to them. You know, and it really seems to be impactful. So we, you know, it was important to us to include different communities and groups of, you know, varying abilities. And so some examples are, we had a workshop down in Washington, D.C. at the AARP, which is the American Association of Retired People. So that included, you know, kind of an aging population. In the D.C. area, what we found is many of them were very, very familiar and often frequent users of public transit, whether it's a train or a bus. So they had a lot of great insights and a lot of great feedback to share. One thing I noticed over the course of that workshop was many of them, some of them in the room, you know, still were in the habit of driving and, you know, had been driving for many, many years. And so old habits are kind of hard to break. And so when we started off the session, we were describing Ollie and giving a sense of what the vehicle is. And, you know, at first, many of them were very reluctant. You know, I think that the fact that self-driving technology is still pretty new may have been a bit intimidating or overwhelming. And, you know, many of them said things like, I can't imagine myself being on a highway at 65 miles an hour and no one's holding a steering wheel. So those old habits, the changing of thinking was clearly something that, you know, kind of we were up against going into that session. But over the course of the day, what I noticed is because Ollie, and, you know, I don't know if many of you picked up on the sense, Ollie is a very friendly looking, it's kind of a squarish, boxy vehicle, and literally because it's got two headlights on the front, even though I don't actually know that they operate, but it's also got the Ollie logo and a smiley kind of, so it's a visually non-threatening vehicle. And when we shared with them that it has a top speed of 30 miles an hour and more frequently is traveling these days at like 22 to 24 miles per hour, and in its current deployments is being used primarily in contained environments like a college campus setting or maybe an airport, the notion that this technology is being rolled out a little more gradually, a little more conservatively, seemed to turn many of the participants' thinking around in this particular workshop that I participated in. So that by the end of the day, we noticed many of the participants were saying, oh, I'd go on it today if we had one here, you know. I think it's just human nature, and it's completely understandable to want to have the technology proven out a little bit before you can fully get behind it. We also held workshops, you know, again, specific to various groups. We had one at the Hearing Loss Association of America. I actually ran a group here back in March up in the Boston area, actually at our IBM Cambridge office, where we invited many of our friends from Perkins, from Carroll Center, from the National Braille Press, from MBTA, for a visual impairment specific workshop where we got a ton of great feedback. We also had some participants from the Mass Rehab Commission and their automotive arm, where they unexpectedly at our visual impairment workshop brought a lot of, you know, really great insights specific to wheelchairs and securing wheelchairs and making sure that, you know, kind of seamless access in place for wheelchair users. So it was a really beneficial workshop that we had here in March. Really, that has been what our first phase of this project, you know, from January basically until last month, has been primarily about holding these workshops and getting actual user feedback from people who are very familiar with public transit, very familiar with taking buses and trains and, you know, what works well and what, you know, even what the bad experiences have been in terms of accessibility. In those workshops, what we noticed is that, you know, there were a lot of impairment-specific solutions that were proposed or brought up. I'll give you an example at the visual impairment workshop, you know, and this is something I can relate to firsthand is, you know, when I get on a bus or a train, if the priority seating, quote-unquote priority seating for people with disabilities is occupied, you know, with my reduced level of vision, like it's not an easy thing for me to move further into the vehicle and easily identify where the next available seat is. One impairment-specific suggestion that came out of the visual impairment workshop was something, some technology or some innovative approach to getting assistance with finding the next available seat in a scenario like that, or, you know, find any available seat. And what might that technology look like? MIT has an AT hack where I actually had a few of the students come up with a very innovative approach to that challenge. You know, there was a solution that they came up in, I mean, literally it was in a one-day hackathon where they had a ceiling-mounted camera that provided a video feed to your smartphone and could describe for you the path to the next available seat. So the camera would actually identify where the seat was, and then you'd get the audio feedback from your smartphone describing the path, you know, whether it was, you know, move ahead, I think it was like 10 steps and the seat is on your left or something to that effect. And so it was, you know, really an interesting approach to it. And quite possibly something, you know, we might kind of flesh out a little more. Again, that was in a 24-hour hack. But, you know, it would be interesting if we could kind of flesh out that prototype and possibly implement into something like Ollie. And so it was fun to be a part of that process. But something beyond the impairment-specific suggestions that we had come away from these workshops, we also noticed a lot of commonalities between the workshops. And regardless of the particular impairment of a given group or the background or the community that was represented in any of the workshops that we held, we noticed that there were a few things that were consistently being requested across all of the groups. And these included things like the need for safety and security. Fundamentally, you create a much more accessible vehicle when you can ride in that vehicle and feel safe and secure doing so. Also things like reliability. You know, the fact that when you need a ride and you call for a ride, you can expect to get a ride. That was something that we heard repeated all across the groups. Predictability, just having some sense on when the vehicle is coming and, you know, when you can expect it to arrive. And so, you know, these were some common themes. And so what we found ourselves doing over the course of this project is really kind of focusing on those a little bit more heavily. And, you know, as you heard in the video, the Ollie vehicles already have IBM's Watson capabilities built in. And Watson, for us, is a very powerful tool. You know, some of you may be familiar with Watson, famously Watson, you know, 6 years ago now, surprisingly, but won on the game show Jeopardy. You know, went up against the kind of most successful contestants that Jeopardy has ever had, and using artificial intelligence performed very well. And it's been 6 years. So, you know, the capabilities of Watson have continued to grow. And so we're very thrilled to have the capabilities, you know, and Watson includes a number of different API, whether it's text-to-speech or speech-to-text, computer vision, all these kinds of capabilities are built right into Watson. And so as part of IBM's research team in accessibility, I'm thrilled to imagine the ways that those capabilities can be put to use in improving accessibility in this way. And so using that as kind of a core foundation, we are very focused at this point on personalizing each individual rider's experience. And so, you know, if we consider that we've got an exciting toolbox at our disposal of emerging technologies, things like augmented reality, things like robots, things like haptics. You know, so all of these things are available and can be combined or could be, you know, implemented in creative ways. And so tying all of this in to the capabilities of Watson on a vehicle, we're very, very encouraged about the potential for introducing in time for next January some exciting new features that ultimately, yeah, today, you know, the intention is to introduce them to a shuttle van that travels 30 miles an hour around a campus setting. But beyond that, if we can do some innovative things with the accessibility of this vehicle, then looking past just this vehicle, it would be exciting to see them roll out across the transportation industry. So that's really the hope. And so, you know, having wrapped up the workshop phase, we're on to the solutioning phase. And this is the more exciting phase for me, because this is where we're going to start actually seeing the physical solutions being produced. And we're actually tagging on to a bunch of hackathons now, similar to what, you know, I participated in at MIT here. You know, we've got some general ideas. We've got very specific use cases. For the purposes of enhancing the accessibility, we are focusing on the four key areas: visual impairment, hearing impairment, mobility impairment, and cognitive impairment. And when we say cognitive impairment, we're kind of focused specifically on challenges of memory or language. And so with those kind of four key focus areas in the near term, you know, we have defined a few specific use cases and what the challenges of, you know, actually being able to ride on Ollie might look like for members of each of those four groups. And so we considered the use cases of what might it be like to call Ollie, like to summon an Ollie vehicle for a ride. Beyond that, you know, when Ollie shows up, navigating to Ollie, you know, what might the challenges there be for someone who's in a wheelchair or for someone, you know, who is blind or visually impaired to actually get to the vehicle. Once you're at the vehicle, the next step, you know, getting on board of Ollie and finding your seat. End to end, you know, we considered the whole Ollie experience as it might be experienced by members of each of these sort of key groups. And so out of that is where we're really seeing a lot of the innovative ideas. Now, here's where I'm excited to involve kind of the broader community, and I'll be sharing when it launches. There's a challenge that we're going to be putting out there. You know, with that kind of premise, basically we're going to be crowdsourcing ideas and thoughts from members of the community and what technologies you think could best be leveraged to create the best possible personalized accessible riding experience for you. And so there is a challenge that is going to be posted within the next several weeks here, and I'll be sure to share the link with Jerry that we can, you know, send out to the ViBug members. But, you know, again, it will be very much an invitation to come and share your thoughts and ideas on, you know, what would make it a better experience for you. And it gives, you know, additional details on the vehicle itself and things like that. You know, this is kind of the approach that we've been taking. You know, we had got some great feedback to help us define those use cases through those workshops. We're on to the hackathon phase where we're going to have, you know, talented young designers and engineers helping us kind of solution a lot of the use cases that we've put in place. And as these technologies are starting to take shape and emerge from this process, we're going to be asking for, you know, basically crowdsourced input to invite, you know, people to say, no, that's a terrible, you know, terrible direction, you're going the wrong way, or, you know, and we're hoping that people will be candid and honest and brutally real, you know, because it's no good if, you know, we just get all nice, you know, feedback. You know, we want to have the honest feedback. So, you know, the hope is that, you know, ultimately by next January, what we'll have is a, you know, I'm still not comfortable saying the world's most accessible self-driving vehicle, but a highly accessible vehicle and a really great place to start from in terms of changing the way that technology helps us to make vehicles more accessible in the future. So
I'd like you to elaborate a little bit more on the 3D printing aspect, because I'm not sure everybody here, I'm not sure I totally understand that. I know that you can produce a plastic model of something using 3D printing. Tell us a little more about how that relates to creating a car or a vehicle.
Like, I actually went to the Locomotors facility in National Harbor, which is down in the D.C. area. And I had heard of 3D printing, like you said, Jerry. Like, you know, I had been vaguely familiar with it. And, you know, what I had known to that point was basically that there were these printers that are, in my understanding, basically the size of traditional printers that, you know, people are using to print out almost like trinkets, you know, you know, almost like smaller models of things that they're being printed to represent. I had heard that there was a very specific type of wrench. I don't know if everyone's heard this story, but like on the International Space Station, they were trying to do some sort of a fix, and it required a very specific type of wrench that they didn't have on board. And wasn't it amazing that they were able to email a file to the International Space Station, and because they had one of these traditionally sized 3D printers there, the team on the space station was able to then print out from that file and there, you know, gave them the wrench that they needed. So that was kind of a neat thing that I had heard about. But I couldn't fathom printing an entire vehicle. And it wasn't until I actually got a tour of their National Harbor facility that it's a heavy duty, it's, you know, a monstrous 3D printer that they have there. It's like going to a, you know, an auto manufacturer. You know, I mean, it's noisy, it has those weird smells, it has, you know, all of the same kind of bustling environment that you'd expect at a like a General Motors plant is very much the scene at Locomotors. And the difference is that in this one kind of, this large 3D printer, as it turns out, they print the various components of the vehicle itself. So it doesn't just print a car, it prints like the side panel. And then, you know, the team at Locomotors then takes those various parts and assembles the vehicle. And so, I mean, it still is fascinating. And at this point, you know, there are some limitations in the 3D printing technology. For instance, like things like the tires still need to be added on after the fact. You know, and I think even the seats, like any of the upholstered items in the vehicle at this stage, although they do, you know, they insist at Locomotors that all of this, it's going to be 100% eventually printed, but at this stage of the game, you know, they're printing basically the panels of the vehicle itself. They can print the motor. I don't claim to understand exactly how that motor operates. You know, it is an electric car, so they're able to print what they need to operate that. Things like the tires and the seats had to be added on after the fact. And again, the team there, once they have all the components that make up the vehicle, they assemble it right on the premises. So.
Wow. Is there any steel in it?
Not in any that I've had exposure to. Like, you know, mostly the Ollie vehicles have not included steel. They do have composite, and he was describing to me, like, the process. You know, they are strength tested, and I think that's probably where you're going with the question. Like, you know, they do test their vehicles, and, you know, Ollie is just one of the vehicles that Locomotors produces. I mean, they're kind of a young, sexy startup, and so they produce all of these, you know, really flashy. Actually, a few of their cars have been used in like the Fast and the Furious series, and, you know, so they've got these really fancy, sporty looking vehicles, and, you know, they all have to pass kind of the safety regulations. So, you know, they're all tested thoroughly. You know, like when I've actually felt an Ollie vehicle, I mean, it's sturdy. It's not dissimilar to touching the side of a bus.
How big the cars are going to be? Is it smaller car, bigger car, 2-seater, 4-seater?
Eventually, I suspect that, you know, self-driving vehicles will take all shapes. Yeah, the one that my team has been focused on is currently a 12-person shuttle van, but that's subject to change depending on the needs of the project. But yeah, the one in the video that James Corden had printed was like a 2-seater roadster. Obviously, we're on a tight timeline between now and January to actually have some demonstrable accessibility enhancements that we can show at CES. Further into 2018, I think, you know, Q4 of 2018 is when Locomotors ultimately hopes to be rolling out actual production, you know, Ollie vehicles that include you know, the features that we're developing today.
Like, say a group of people wanted to go somewhere. Is it for in-city travel initially, for greater distance travel?
With the current state of the Ollie vehicle, where it does have a top speed of 30 miles an hour, you know, it is really intended at present to be very much kind of a shuttle in spirit, if that makes sense, like a shuttle you might take at the airport. There are currently two full-sized Ollie vehicles that are out and deployed. One of them is in Munich, Germany, and one of them is actually in Tennessee, where James in the video was. And both of those vehicles are being used in very controlled environments, again, rolling around a campus setting. Very low risk, very, you know, reasonably low traffic. But yeah, that's kind of the initial. And again, many of our workshop participants seemed very comforted by the fact that it would be kind of a gradual rollout, allowing time to kind of prove the technology. I mean, you know, even though IBM is not really involved in any of the self-driving piece of this, like, you know, we're not doing anything with the self-driving part of it. That's all being handled by other well-known and well-respected technology companies. What IBM is doing is participating in trying to make it accessible. I mean, you know, as someone who myself personally feels very excited about the prospects of self-driving vehicles, like, it's no good to me if I go out in my driveway and I get in a self-driving vehicle and I can't operate the thing. If I need to ask my wife to come, you know, plug in my destination for me, then, you know, so much of the potential benefit is lost. So, you know, that's the part that my team at IBM is kind of focused on, and I'm proud to be kind of help steer things in that direction. But yeah.
Have you been able to, for example, put in a destination on one of these sample?
I haven't yet. At most of the workshops where I've participated, they have a mini Ollie, which is like a half-scale model of the full-size vehicle, and it's not, you know, the fully functional one. A nice thing for the local motors team is that demand is growing, you know, as more and more people find out about this vehicle. To this point, they've just had the two in existence. But I know next month in June, actually in response to demand and some early orders that they've taken from some organizations, they fully are, you know, on schedule to printing out 20 more of the vehicles. And again, you know, those vehicles won't necessarily include all the accessibility features that we're in the process of adding over this project. But they will become more and more widely available. But ideally, over the course of the next year here, we'll only see that continue, and as we add new features that improve the accessibility, it'll just continue to grow and grow. So,
what is expected, you know, the cost of that vehicle will be to us if we want to buy it, say, after 2 or 3 years in 2020?
My understanding is that, you know, the cost is on par with what, you know, a city or a metro transit authority might expect to pay from traditional manufacturers. Perhaps, and I don't want to misstate, but, you know, I think that with the 3D printed process, there are potential areas for cost savings to those organizations. But again, I can't really speak in an informed way in much detail on that.
I had been listening to NPR, and there was a discussion about self-driving vehicles. And I think I was stating all these different concerns. One of the things is it's going to be really difficult to regulate insurance policies. And then there are things about interstate and all these complications. And he said he thinks he would be very surprised to see in his lifetime, and I think he may have been like 30, he said, I don't think I'm going to see a self-driving vehicle as just part of the everyday course of driving around.
That doesn't surprise me. I, you know, there are many skeptics. You know, I can say that to a large extent, with my team at IBM, because we're not necessarily heavily involved in the self-driving piece of this, like, we've been immune. But I do know that the team at Local Motors are very heavily involved in those discussions. I mean, they're in Washington, D.C. every day, you know, talking about, you know, the policies and kind of putting this, you know, whatever in place that's necessary to regulate this technology as it rolls out, you know. To a large extent, it seems at this point anyway that it, has been largely handled state by state. I think I heard a report how Google was testing some of their self-driving technology in California, but found more favorable, you know, or welcoming climate in Arizona, so actually moved their testing facility, or their testing activities anyway, to better suit, just because the state was more open to the idea. So yeah, I think a lot of that is still very much being defined. What I can say is that when you hear a lot of the numbers behind the potential benefits of self-driving cars, when you know, researchers share things like the, you know, the reduction in auto-related fatalities that we could stand to see when you remove human error from the driving, you know, there are some very compelling statistics or very compelling research. Many, you know, there's a lot of research being done right here, you know, locally on self-driving. There are enough very compelling arguments, I think, that I would be very surprised if the seeming momentum that we're seeing for the technology doesn't continue or even increase.
I have heard that the insurance costs would go almost to the bottom because without human beings, there would be much fewer fatalities and accidents. So,
that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that makes complete sense.
Yeah. Newer cars, higher end cars today, have lane assist so that if you start to drift out of your lane, it will drift you back in. They have cruise control that will keep you at a determined distance that you decide behind the car in front of you. So we've come a long way toward at least driver assisted vehicles just in recent years. But I know that one of the issues that has been a problem is when there are detectors on the roof of the car, and when snow gets on them or when it's a very sunny day, they're working on how to deal with those kinds of things that make it more difficult for the car to see what's around it.
I have heard that there are, specific to like the Northeast in this climate, like there are some challenges to the technology that are unique to regional areas, I guess, yeah.
Can you comment, because one of the things that, at least for me as a blind person, I know a lot of people in this room who are using Uber and Lyft now.
Sure.
And there's been talk that, I know at least Uber is supposedly putting a lot of money into this, because a lot of research into this, because they eventually want to have self-driving cars as Uber cars.
Yeah, I had heard that myself.
And they cut that funding significantly, though.
It has what?
They cut that funding.
I think that's the headline this week, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it seems like there may be fits and starts to that.
In terms of the accessibility, are you at IBM working on a voice-activated way of, you know, GPS of telling the vehicle where you want it to go, or what options you're looking into for a totally blind person in terms of?
Well, I mean, throughout this process, because we're inviting the feedback from the community, and you know, we're working with, you know, engineering students and engineering teams, we're trying to not be prescriptive coming into it. Like, we're trying not to say, here's what we think we should do. Like, we don't want to stifle creativity, because we want to make sure what we end up with are the biggest, you know, potential ideas. You know, we have various, as you might imagine, I mean, IBM's a huge company, we have teams throughout our organization that are working with all, you know, any technology you might think of in some way or another. When I said, you know, we're excited to have kind of a large toolbox to tap into, like, we literally want to be able to, a good idea is a good idea. And regardless of what the technology being called for is, you know, if it's going to suit the need and it's going to provide the most accessible or the best personalized user experience, then, you know, absolutely we're open to using it. So, you know, if a voice guidance via GPS is clearly emerging as that, then, you know, we have resources available to provide that, and, you know, would certainly implement it if it proves out to be, you know, a very accessible way to do it.
All right, well, thank you very much.